Absolutely.
Okay. I'd like to thank you both for your interest in the inquiry and for your appearance at today's hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to assist me in gathering evidence for the Climate Health WA inquiry into the impacts of climate change on health in Western Australia. My name is Taran Wiramantri and I've been appointed by the Chief Health Officer to undertake the inquiry. Besides me is Dr. Sarah Joyce, the inquiry's project director. If everyone could please be aware that the use of mobile phones and other recording devices is not permitted in this room, so please make sure that your phone is on silent or switched off. This hearing is a formal procedure convened under Section 231 of the Public Health Act 2016. While you are not being asked to give your evidence under oath or affirmation, it is important you understand that there are penalties under the Act for knowingly providing a response or information that is false or misleading. This is a public hearing and a transcript of your evidence will be made for the public record. If you wish to make a confidential statement during today's proceedings, you should request that that part of your evidence be taken in private. You have previously been provided with the inquiry's terms of reference and information on giving evidence to the inquiry. Before we begin, do you have any questions about today's hearing?
No.
Jessica?
No questions for me.
For the transcript, could I ask each of you to state your name and the capacity in which you are here today, and also briefly state your name prior to speaking throughout the hearing?
I'm Catherine Middleton and I was 2018 Co-Green Project Coordinator. I'm here as a representative of the Australian Medical Students Association.
I'm Jessica Yang, this year's President of the Australian Medical Students Association.
Thank you both. I'll direct my question to Catherine in the first instance, Jessica, and if she wishes to ask you to speak, I'll ask her to indicate that. Ms. Middleton, would you like to make a brief opening statement?
No, I think we can go straight into questions.
Could you please tell us about the Australian Medical Students Association's 2017 Climate Change and Health Policy and your Climate Change and Health project called Code Green?
So, do I need to state my name again?
If you don't mind.
Catherine Middleton. The Australian Medical Students Association is the peak representative body for all Australian medical students. It serves to connect, inform and represent all of Australia's 17,000 medical students. In 2017, AMSA passed its Climate Change and Health Policy, which recognises the scientific consensus reached by the IPCC and that of medical bodies that anthropogenic climate change poses a significant and imminent threat to human health. It states that as future leaders and future health professionals, medical students must advocate for the prevention of climate change and its impact on health to protect our future patients from its consequences. This policy calls upon federal and state governments to proactively take measures and restructure policy to achieve reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in line with the Paris Agreement and in order to fulfil our international obligations under the UNFCCC. It calls for tangible actions to attain meaningful reductions in emissions and calls for the end of economic incentivisation of fossil fuels and a just transition to a more renewable future. The policy also calls upon universities and medical schools to integrate climate change and health into the medical curriculum and for students and health to consider the impacts of the healthcare sector on the changing climate. So in line with the policy, AMSA Code Green is the climate change and health project of the association. We provide a platform for medical students to engage with environmental advocacy and fight for the health of our planet and the people who depend on it. So Code Green aims to inspire, engage and educate Australian medical students on all things related to the environment and health. In the past few years, Code Green has achieved a number of things. We've launched online education modules designed for medical students to expand their knowledge on the subject. We provided resources for students ahead of the federal election surrounding key global health issues. We launched our AMSA Code Green Sustainable Events Guide to ensure the sustainability of AMSA as an organisation. We've been integral in the commitment of AMSA to divest it from fossil fuels. We've partnered with other youth organisations to support the school strike climate and have partnered with the Lancet Countdown to help develop the Lancet Australia policy brief. Overall, we've become an influential voice representing the concerns of the future medical workforce regarding climate change and health.
Thank you. You mentioned one partnership there with the school strike movement. The youth voice is clearly important in discussing climate action. Can I ask whether AMSA has any other formal or informal relationships or networks with other student or youth bodies, either in this state, nationally or internationally?
Yeah, I think Jessica is probably best to answer the question.
Yep. Hi, Jessica Yang here. AMSA's advocacy is really built on the fundamental of working collaboratively with other organisations, and in particular youth-based organisations and ones in the health sphere. So at a local level, our policy deciding body is made up from representatives from each medical school. So in Western Australia, those would be UWA, Notre Dame, Fremantle and Curtin University. And our Global Health Committee also has representatives from university global health groups. So these are like local student interest groups at each university that champion global health initiatives. At a state level, we work really closely with state medical school councils. So they have those in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. And in Western Australia, very excitingly, next year they'll be forming their own state medical school council. And at a national level, we have a lot of formal and informal relationships. I'll just list the ones that are a bit more relevant. So with the Climate and Health Alliance, student representatives of Doctors for the Environment Australia, the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association, the GP Students Network, the Australasian Surgical Students Association, the National Rural Health Students Network, and the National Pharmacy Students Association. This list is not exhaustive by any means. And then even at an international level, AMSA is a part of the International Federation of Medical Students Associations, so that's the ISMSA. And they work directly with the WHO and UN, also on climate-related matters. This year, we also applied to attend meetings of the United Nations, and we represented Australian medical students at the UN General Assembly in New York to speak on universal healthcare, so really providing that youth voice on an international stage.
Greg, can I ask, has AMSA or IFMSA's sent any representatives to COP25 in Madrid, which is currently going? You mentioned that you've sent reps to UN General Assembly before, a COP meaning Council of Parties?
I don't believe AMSA has sent a delegation, but I can't answer for IFNSA.
Catherine Richardson, yeah, I'm aware that they have sent a delegation to COP in Madrid at the moment, and does every year send a delegation.
Thank you. Why is it important to work in partnerships? Because there are extensive partnerships, and all partnerships take energy. And to participate, why have you chosen to act and partner like this?
I'll speak first, Catherine Middleton. I think that these partnerships are really important because we bring a perspective that the only perspective we can give is the perspective we have. So we don't have the perspective of health professionals, if we're not Indigenous people, we don't have the perspective of First Nations peoples. And so I think those partnerships are really important so that the perspective we're giving is both well-informed and we're only speaking to what we know. Also, it's not necessarily, like, we're a volunteer organisation. There's only so much we can do with the power that we have, the human power that we have. So I think these partnerships are really important in that respect. Jess, do you want to speak further to the point?
Absolutely. I think 100% agree with everything that Catherine has said. And on another level, I think that coming together with sort of a united message of organisations that have similar goals makes the message a lot more profound. And you can see that, for example, last year, many medical organisations, including AMSA and the AMA and several medical colleges, came together to write a letter about climate change being a public health issue and really an emergency. And coming together to speak on that really really gave power to our voice. And then on a more representative level, if we're able to get the opinions of local students at a Western Australia level from, you know, from UWA, Curtin and Notre Dame Fremantle, then we're really able to guide our advocacy based on what our medical students want.
Okay, great, thank you. What level of priority is this issue for AMHSA and for IFMSA compared to other issues which you obviously care about?
I'll speak first, Catherine Middleton. So for every year AMHSA does a stock take of priorities amongst medical students of what they think are the most concerning issues to their future career and just what's concerning them. And this year, for the first time, climate change and health made it into the top 8 of the national priorities of AMHSA, which I think reflects the growing momentum from all sectors that climate change specifically, but also climate change and health is a growing concern of young people. I can't speak necessarily as to the priority it takes in IFMSA, but I think that the ongoing work that they have done, and they've done an extensive amount of work in this space, really does show that climate change is seen as one of the most pressing and imminent threats to human health. And they time and time again quote World Health Organization statements to that point as well. So Jess, if you have anything to add?
Yeah, absolutely. So the national survey that we send out at the end of each year goes out to each medical student, and we ask them to pick out of a list of about 30, you know, which 8 do you think is most important? And as Catherine said, for the first time, climate change and health has hit those top 8. And the other 8, you can find them on our website, generally look at things like medical students, mental health and well-being and workforce issues and a few public health issues. I think it just goes to show how important and how seriously medical students are taking climate change as an issue.
Thank you, and I apologise for going off script slightly with the questions, but I think it's interesting to hear about this, and so I'll ask another question which I haven't given you a notice of, which is, does AMHSA see itself more as part of the health world, as an organisation within a world of health organisations, or as an organisation within a world of student organisations, or as an organisation within a world of youth organisations? Because I think it's interesting how you see yourself in this space at this time.
I think that's a great question for the president of
the absolutely. So Jess here. I think Taryn, you've actually split up our sort of multiple roles that AMHSA takes on. So as an advocacy organisation, we sort of have multiple responsibilities to, one, you know, further the interests of medical students and the conditions that medical students want and their well-being. And then also in terms of targeting issues that may not be directly medical student issues, like, for example, you know, our curriculum or something like that, but are issues that medical students are passionate about, and that is all fundamentally guided by our representatives and by our medical students talking to us and saying this is what we want you to do. So that where our place stands in sort of advocacy space and what sort of organisation is guided by what our medical students want us to do. So we have a lot of different hats. You know, there's Code Green being one of them. We have plenty of projects that target other areas that medical students say that they find important, and we've got about 600 volunteers at this point that make sure that each of them are getting the time that they serve.
Thank you. In your written submission, your first recommendation is to research local impacts of climate on health in Western Australia. So can I ask a little bit about AMHSA in Western Australia? You know, how strong are you in this state? How are you supported or funded? And is there anything you might contribute in developing this understanding, which is part of research, in partnership, obviously, with others?
I think Jess is going to answer this question.
Yep, Jessica. So we're very, very lucky to have strong relationships in Western Australia and really each state. So as I mentioned before, each of our 22 medical schools have our AMSA representatives, so in Western Australia, Curtin, UWA and Notre Dame Free Mantle. And these representatives vote on what our policies should look like and what we should be doing. So in terms of what else we sort of contribute and the medical students from Western Australia contribute to AMSA, we hold major national events each year and we aim to engage students locally from each state. So last year, our national convention, which is actually the largest student-run event in the Southern Hemisphere, I believe. I think in the past it was previously the world, but we couldn't get the statistics on that. And that was held in Perth at the Perth Convention Centre, and our Global Health Conference in 2021 will also be in Perth, so really excited to return. In terms of how this sort of local strength can contribute to researching those local impacts, what we've learned at AMSA is that our local representation is really important in understanding the context behind the attitudes that those medical students have and using that to guide our advocacy. So, for example, students in Western Australia will have problems that are unique to their situation compared to other locations. And likewise, looking at tackling climate change and health in Western Australia is going to need to be a bit specific. So one of the initiatives that Catherine mentioned, the Lancet Countdown on Health and Climate Change, so I believe it's Georgia Behrens from our Global Health Committee helped write the Australian-specific policy brief that emphasised how important it was that an evidence base that was from Australia needs to be taken into consideration when looking at tackling climate change in Australia.
That's terrific, thank you. Mm-hmm. Your second recommendation is on workforce education. Can you give us your understanding of how well climate change education is incorporated into medical curricula in WA and nationally?
Sure. Catherine Middleton here. So nationally, the integration of climate change in the medical curriculum has been increasing over the past few years, but it does currently remain quite limited. So at the University of Western Australia, climate change and health is addressed in the teaching of general practice. We receive a two-hour seminar on climate change and health, which is delivered to students in the third year of their degree. This is the only specific teaching on climate change and health that we receive in our curricula. This teaching explores major healthcare impacts of climate change, including heat-related mortality, air pollution, extreme weather events, and psychological impacts of climate change. It also briefly addresses the health co-benefits of climate change adaptation and mitigation strategies, and there are further online learning resources available for students. Our current understanding, and this is based on anecdotal evidence, is that there's no formal climate change teaching at the University of Notre Dame. Students do receive teaching by way of case-based tutorials, which integrate practical skills with curriculum content, and one of these case-based tutorials is regarding emergency and disaster management. In 2019, they used a full-day workshop with the example of a tsunami to encourage students to consider emergency management and think about vector-borne diseases, but the teaching was not explicitly linked back to climate change and health. We're not currently aware of climate change and health teaching in the Curtin medical school curriculum. Overall, though, the teaching received by medical students at a university level doesn't represent the attitudes, understanding and concerns of medical students regarding the health of our planet and its people. At present, a working group within the Medical Deans of Australia and New Zealand has formed to work collaboratively with medical students to essentially perform a stock take of how well climate change and health is taught in medical schools. As medical deans are responsible for preparing doctors for entry into clinical practice and for the care of our future patients, they have an obligation to ensure that the teaching of medical students reflects the issues that we'll face in our career. So now I'm going to hand over to Jess, who's going to give you a bit of a further understanding of where they're at in terms of that review.
So very excited to see medical deans form this working group and look into where the gaps are in terms of teaching climate change in medical education, and I believe that they're coming together to make recommendations to schools in terms of where they can fit it into their curriculum, and also the Australian Medical Council regarding accreditation standards of medical schools. And I think they just recently won an award for sustainability in healthcare in conjunction with Bond University to celebrate this work and to introducing climate change into the health curricula. And so we've definitely identified that there is that gap in what students are learning about climate change and health. And organisations like ours and MDANS is looking at trying to fill that gap. So at our level, the Global Health Team and our Medical Education Committee, they've come up with supplementary learning materials by our online portals for students who are looking to fill that gap. And Taryn, you did mention in the last question about support and funding, and I forgot to answer that on that end. In terms of how these initiatives are supported and funded, they're often sort of born out of motivated medical students to create something, but sometimes are funded by the Commonwealth government or state departments or even colleges to help further those initiatives and get those pieces of curriculum out to the medical students.
Thank you. I might make a couple of comments on this issue and the previous one based on what you've said. So thank you for giving us your understanding of what's being taught here in Western Australia. And we are aware of the Medical Deans of Australia and New Zealand working group and the article published in the Medical Journal of Australia in April 2018, which outlines the work they're doing. And it's obviously extremely worthwhile work, and the working group we know is active, and I suppose our observation would be that common to a number of other issues and developments, there has been, you know, Australian healthcare in general isn't at the forefront of activity at the moment in this space, and everyone said that, but there is a building momentum to do something, and certainly in this state, all the health service providers, et cetera, and the Department of Health, et cetera, and people have come and talked to us, want to get going, and there's a lot of things they can base their work on, such as these working groups, et cetera. But our observation is some of the processes, the time frames are just a bit too long to suit the need to get going quickly. So that's not a criticism of the processes as they were invented, but the process of curriculum change, for example, takes a relatively long time. And it's not that people aren't working assiduously within that existing process to get curriculum change, but is the process fast enough, or do you have to actually kind of revise the process to make it a bit quicker to meet the challenge? Do you have anything to say on that? Because it could take, for, you know, many more years before this reaches fruition based on our current understanding of the process.
Middleton here. So in terms of integrating climate change into the curriculum, obviously it will take a long time to, like you said, include it in graduate outcomes and those sorts of things. But something that has started to make its way into my personal teaching, like what I've been being taught as a medical student, is just considerations, climate considerations in every aspect of health. For example, we were learning about asthma and metered dose inhalers versus other sorts of asthma medications you can use. And we had a single slide in one of our lectures about which inhaler has less environmental impact in it. And I think that it's that sort of teaching, which is one, the more integrated teaching that requires less less effort when it comes to including it in graduate outcomes, less bureaucratic effort. But what it does require is a bit more motivation from an individual teacher level. So I think that for lack of a better word, bureaucratic change, then yes, it's a very long process, but that's not the only way that change can occur. Individual lecturers, and I think that's what we're seeing more, are very passionate about this issue and understand that it permeates through every aspect of our future career, and then that's reflected in the teaching that we receive, then I think that it's going to be something that is just an understanding of all future health professionals, that client considerations are something that we need to consider at every point of treating our patients.
Ms. Yang, did you have anything to add there?
Absolutely. Look, Taryn, I share your frustrations in the lengthy process that it takes sometimes for some of those larger changes. I'm currently on the AMC Medical School Accreditation Committee, and so that's where we see some of those things come into play. I think there's plans to look at reviewing those standards in the very near future, so hopefully that's an opportunity to sort of tackle it at a national level. But I'd absolutely echo what Catherine is saying in terms of to maybe speed up the process a little bit. There are already individuals at each medical school, whether they be, you know, professors or lecturers or people in their med socs that are very passionate about these things. And if they're supported, you know, at a faculty level, at a university level, or even at a state government level to spread that message and to provide more of that, then those sorts of individual champions can help fill that gap before the wider sort of national change is made.
Thanks. And just to go back to the your previous answer around the various medical schools coming together in this state next year, I think you said, to make a fairly obvious point that Australia is a federation, and therefore there are, you know, various processes, checks and balances between the levels of government, but health is delivered at a state level. And what we've seen through this inquiry is that there are a lot of national organisations with national policies, etc., who are all very relevant to, obviously, our workforce here. But the joining up of those national initiatives at a state level, the structures really aren't there. So I do commend you to that getting together, you know, the state-based medical schools here is important. We've also started to have conversations with some of the postgraduate colleges as well, who are national colleges, but how could they have a better integration of their activity and cooperation here in Western Australia, say through their state president. It'll be those members of those specialist colleges who are the teachers for your medical student training, etc. And so, you know, they could be galvanised to introduce more into the existing curriculum. That's kind of one way that this can all kind of join together. I ask if you're in a position to speak about the International Federation of Medical Students Associations training manual on climate change and health?
Yeah, I can speak about that a little bit, Catherine Middleton. I'll speak first a bit about the IFMSA climate change policy briefly and then speak about their main initiatives. So the IFMSA reviewed their climate change and health policy in 2018, and the core position statement outlines it as future health professionals. We have a duty of care not only to our future patients but also to communities locally, nationally and globally to act on anthropogenic climate change. So the main initiative of IFMSA pertaining to climate change and health is their training manual. It was released in 2016 with the support of the World Health Organisation, and it was designed as a kind of all-in-one resource to bring together climate change, health and youth advocacy. It provides a bit of an introduction to the science behind climate change and explains climate change as a health issue, as well as providing an international political context to climate change. It provides resources for students and student organisations for capacity building, advocacy and campaigning in this space. If we think a bit more broadly about how IFMSA operates, IFMSA is a respected voice in the climate change and health space, so it sends delegations to UN climate negotiations, including UN subsidiary body meetings and conference and party meetings. And it helps build students' capacity to engage in that high-level negotiation and discussions on the interaction between climate change and health. So a number of Australian medical students have had the opportunity to attend these meetings as IFMSA delegates. kind of linking back to our last discussion, is that the IFMSA also has released a 2020 vision for climate health in the medical curricula document, which has called on all medical schools to include an element of climate health in their curricula by 2020 and to integrate climate health in all aspects of medical school life by 2025. Currently, a working group is formulating a climate change and health education framework to equip its members with tools to implement this 2020 vision, and in addition to creating an assessment scorecard for members to score their medical university in terms of the climate change and health education. Anything to add, Jeff?
Ms. Yang?
Sorry, just cut out for a second there. I don't have anything to add on the IFMSA front.
Thank you. That's very helpful. If you, as future health leaders, thinking forward, are to be effective advocates in this area, how important is it that the health sector itself contributes to reducing its emissions and environmental footprint?
So as you would have heard time and time again, the current understanding in the literature is that the carbon footprint associated with healthcare is 7% of Australia's total, with hospital and pharmaceuticals as the major contributors. And this is not an insignificant amount. Reducing the environmental impact of healthcare is important because human health is inextricably linked to the health of the environment. So the AMBA's 2017 Climate Change and Health Policy called upon the healthcare sector to implement strategies to reduce its carbon footprint and consider waste minimisation efforts. This is in keeping with the AMA statement on environmental sustainability, which was released in March of this year. The statement called upon the Australian Government to take action to facilitate environmental sustainability in healthcare. It also highlights that within Australia this means an increased coordination at a national level with clear and accountable targets for reducing the sector's environmental footprint, while also calling for health and medical professionals to commit to individual behavioural change. There are a number of steps and that hospitals and medical practices can take to improve their environmental sustainability. So joining the Global Green and Healthy Hospitals Network, of which AMSA is a member, is a great first step, and it can provide examples, rather simple examples, of how to improve hospital sustainability. These include, but it's definitely not limited to, reducing single-use medical equipment, recycling appropriate hospital waste, and avoiding potent anaesthetic greenhouse gases. The AMA has also called upon for the development of a national sustainable development unit similar to that to the NHS developed in the UK to coordinate efforts to improve sustainability, setting targets, measuring progress and providing best practice examples and incentivising behavioural change. Finally, the release of our 2018 AMSA Sustainable Events Guide acknowledges that we understand the impact that we as individuals and as a sector have. Alongside our commitment to divest from fossil fuels, it highlights that we also are looking to improve the sustainability of our organisation and our member organisations too.
Ms. Young?
Catherine said it all really, really well. I think it all boils down to, you know, if this is an issue that medical students and medical professionals as a whole has said that, you know, this is something that will impact patient outcomes, that is a huge public health issue, that we need to also tackle it from our end.
Yeah, and we've had most admissions have covered the issues by talking about their recommendations about what others should do, about what should be done in an ideal world without specifying exactly who should do it, but also complemented that by saying what they would do as individuals and as their organisations to increase the credibility of the advocacy by what others should do. There seems to me, and I've said it before, that there is a bit of a gap between what the health sector is doing itself and what it's calling for others to do, and that gap needs to be closed, as quickly as possible, really. Is that consistent with your understanding, Ms. Middleton?
I firmly and completely agree with that. I think that that's exactly what's occurring. I think that there is a gap that needs to be met, and I don't know how necessarily it's going to, but I hope that this inquiry is going to contribute to that, for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, sorry, Jess here. Absolutely, it's a matter of practicing what you preach, and I think at an ANCS level, you know, while we might not be the literal decision makers at that state or government level, we can show that we are committing to this promise to be more sustainable and to tackle these issues by looking at how we run our own initiatives, how we run our own events, and how we communicate this to other people to encourage them to do the same.
Thank you. Just my final question. As we have conducted this inquiry, the issue of climate change in general and climate and health in particular has been constantly in the news. What is your impression of the changing context of all this discussion and what that means for ANCSA's agenda in the next few years?
I'm going to hand this question over to Jess, if that's okay.
Yep, Jess. As I sit in this teleconference, I'm currently in Sydney looking out my window, which is the landscape is very much just shrouded in smoke, and it's been like this for, I think, the past several weeks. I've actually personally just been holed up in my apartment because it's very difficult for me to go outside without triggering my asthma. So I think part of that changing context isn't just, you know, what's being shown on the news. It's literally what we're living through right now. And I think what has changed in particular, especially from a medical standpoint, is framing climate change as a health issue. You know, not a political issue, but this is something that is impacting our health, and unfortunately, it's impacting it now. I think from a medical student and medical professional level, there's been overall support. The fact that we've had climate change and health as one of our national priorities this year just goes to show that, and it's no coincidence that this came several weeks after the AMA declared climate change as a health emergency. So I think translating this idea of climate change being a public health issue is one of the ways to get people on board to understand that this is something that's impacting them now. So I think it was after the school climate strikes in September, I believe, we had medical students from every major city attending, and there were hundreds of thousands of people all over Australia in attendance. There was a lot of media around that. In fact, ANCSA was in the media regarding that, and we did get those questions, how is this impacting health, and as future medical professionals, how is this going to impact your future patients? So I think that part of the agenda is what medical students and is what medical professionals can speak to. It's what the outcomes for patients as a whole.
Ms. Middleton, Ms. Yang, thank you both for your interest in this inquiry and for your attendance at today's hearing. A transcript of this hearing will be so that you can correct minor factual errors before it is placed on the public record. If you could please return the transcript within 10 working days of the date of the covering letter or email, otherwise it will be deemed to be correct. While you cannot amend your evidence, if you would like to explain particular points in more detail or present further information, you can provide this as an addition to your submission to the inquiry when you return the transcript. Once again, thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you so much, Kat.
Thanks, Jessica, for dialing in. That's great. Thanks, Catherine.